All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What the fuckeristas? What is happening? What is happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? Where are we at? Clifton Collins Jr. is my guest today. Now, look, you'll know him if you look him up. He's been in a lot of movies, Traffic, Capote, Westworld, Pacific Rim, Nightmare Alley. The guy is like a legit and working character actor who I've always liked, and I think he's an incredible actor. I'm always engaged by him. But he did this movie that I saw called Jockey, and it's sort of what made me want to talk to him. I don't know how or why I saw it, but I watched it, and it's about a jockey. And we booked him on that, and then the day he was coming over, he had a bike accident and was injured, and now he's here. And he's an intense guy with an interesting story that goes way back in Hollywood, the glorious days of Hollywood. It's very strange about old Hollywood. You know, my girlfriend Kit lives in an old Hollywood building, and one of my favorite Hollywood historians, Mr. Cliff Nesteroff, happens to live in the same building, which I didn't know, and it completely makes sense. It's a particular area of Hollywood, of L.A., that really is probably the most old Hollywood-ish of the old Hollywoods. And there used to be a whole bunch of people that were kind of obsessed with old Hollywood, and I was kind of halfway there, but it seems to be a dying nerdism. I think there was a very specific nerdism that revolved around old Hollywood movies. And it doesn't seem to be as many as there used to be. But it is kind of fascinating. You know, the way that the word Hollywood is thrown around today, it never indicates anything good on either side, oddly. But, you know, the birth of this business, of show business, and the creation of this illusion factory and this dream machine and this, you know, this sort of like artistic haven is kind of fascinating. And I don't know, you know, it's all going to be gone. No one's going to eventually care anymore, but it's pretty fascinating. That was sort of what was fascinating talking to Clifton, because he sort of comes from it. But in a very specific way. It was a very interesting conversation, and I like the guy. Look, for those of you in L.A. here, I'm at Largo this Saturday. I'm doing the Mark Has Friends Over to do music and comedy. The band is playing. We got a nice lineup of songs that I'm going to attempt to try. We've got the comedy of Willie Simon and Ali Colbert. The band and I are going to try to – we're going to do – we seem to be – in a zone right now. I'm going to attempt a song by the Velvet Underground that's not as known as their other ones, called I Guess I'm Falling in Love. And I'm going to do He Stopped Loving Her Today, which I'm very nervous about, the Georgia Jones song, which you shouldn't even attempt, but I'm going to do it. We're going to do a Creedence tune. We're going to do Up Around a Bend, because that song, more than almost any other song, seared itself into my brain when I was a very young guy, probably like 7 or 8 maybe, in the basement with my parents' old Iowa cassette player that had detachable speakers and a box of cassette tapes that they didn't use anymore because they'd moved on to reel-to-reel and records upstairs. And I had that box of records, man, and Cosmos Factory was in there. Bobby Gentry's Greatest Hits was in there. Johnny Cash, Live at San Quentin, that was in that box. Jerry Vale's Greatest Hits. But, man, that opening riff of Up Around the Bend just seared its way into my deepest consciousness, and I still love it. And I don't know if I can nail that riff. We're actually going to play it together, me and Jason, but we're going to try that song. We're going to do Before You Accuse Me. I'd like to think we're doing the Bo Diddley version or the Creedence version and not the Eric Clapton version, but he sort of kind of owned that song on his Unplugged, but it's a great song. We're going to reprise, is that how you say it? We're going to do Wharf Rat again, my favorite Grateful Dead song, a little psychedelic journey. The reason we're going to do that song is because when my drummer, Ned, got the song to learn it, he was like, I thought it was the most boring thing I ever heard. And for some reason, when we played it, he was like, oh my God, that was wild. Like, we got out there. It's like a portal into a psychedelic zone, which is what the Dead is. But for some reason, that song, in my mind and in my heart, does that. And when we play it, it did it too. So we're going to try it again. We'll probably do No Fun by the Stooges. And then we might open with a riff that we pulled from a Status Quo song. I don't think I'll sing the song. We're just going to do a blues jam because that's what I am, I guess. I'm an older man who's got a bunch of guys I play with, but we're doing cool songs. But you got to, you know, got to throw a blues jam in, don't you? Don't you? And I think something's happened recently that I think I'm happy about. It's happened a couple of times. I think I've crossed some threshold as I transition into an older man here that I'm not unhappy about. Like I told you I did Heidegger's podcast, and then somebody had tweeted something that they said that I love seeing Maron. He's such a character. And I was like, finally, I'm a character. That means I have definition that I don't always see myself, but I think it has something to do with age and something to do with being more sort of at home in my skin and more something to do and has something to do with me being unavoidably me, which I don't think I've noticed before, or I don't think I ever was, but it seems to have sort of settled in. Because Eric Griffin the other night at the Comedy Store, he said, he was like, you should do a host a talk show like on TV or something. And I'm like, no, no one does that anymore. And we're good. But he's like, but you're just such a character. And I'm like, oh my God, that's twice. That's twice in like a week. And part of me is really kind of like, wow, has it finally happened? Am I finally a character? I hope so. I've been waiting to be a character my entire life, and maybe it's here. Maybe I'm at the right age for it. This is where you move into your character years. I'm beginning my character years. Did I mention I'm back at Dynasty Typewriter on July 11th, 18th, and 25th? Those are all Tuesdays. You can go to WTFpod.com for tickets for those. So look, again, Clifton Collins Jr. was supposed to be here a while back, but it was a delayed booking because of the bike accident that he literally had on the day he was supposed to come over. And when he finally came over, we got in it. And it's quite a story. And he's quite an actor. So this is me talking to Clifton. Where did I see you last? Pull that mic into your face.
It was at Houdini's house.
Oh, right. For that. What were we doing there? It was an event.
It was a celebration.
It was like a network did it, right? Was it?
It was for a film, was it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was doing press for Chalky at the time.
I feel like it was a party for a couple of movies under one.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
It kind of was. It was like, yeah.
It was fun.
It was pretty fun. That house was kind of wild.
I love that house.
You do?
Yeah, I've had a couple parties there.
Yeah?
I mean, not me personally, but You've been to? Oh, yeah.
It seems a little worn down, you know, like half a museum, half an event, you know, like an event hall. You know how things just
the way they set that one up, yeah. But yeah. What I went to before was actually, I think, a birthday party, so it felt much more intimate.
Oh, right.
So it felt more like a house party.
Oh, okay, because you can kind of wander around, and there's rooms that look like museum rooms almost, like Houdini rooms.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks a little worn down. You know when places are, like hotels are cool places, are cool at the beginning, but then too many weddings happen?
Yes, sir.
And it just take the soul out of the place.
It really does, yeah.
Just weddings just suck the energy out. How'd you get all fucked up?
This buddy of mine named Mr. Cartoon got me back into BMX bikes.
Yeah, well, there's two red flags. Mr. Cartoon got me into BMX bikes again in my 50s. Yeah, okay. That should have been.
And it gets worse from there because everybody thinks I was jumping cars or doing some crazy stunt, and I was not. Sadly, I didn't even endo. I just plowed in front of my driveway going to the gym. I was like, I'll just get a nice little comfy bike ride on my red line to the the gym, which is only two blocks.
No.
So I feel like a douchebag driving a 911. Like, here's my 911, yeah. two blocks.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah, let me ride the red line.
Yeah.
And I went up to crank it really big, and I stood up like you did, like a teenager.
Sure, yeah.
And then
yeah.
because it's a freestyle bike, as I started yeah. to go over the speed bump, it wasn't quite over the 90-degree angle, and it went backwards.
Oh,
and
okay.
I was standing.
Yeah.
Oh, so the whole back. Way, just gow, straight to the bottom.
What'd you break?
I cracked the bone.
Which one?
That's a good question.
A leg?
I wouldn't look at the x-ray.
Oh. Is it a leg?
Yeah, my it's cracked. The ligament wasn't torn. Actually, the ligament broke the bone.
Yeah.
It stuck to it. So, but it's in place right now, and it's all healing, and I'm really close. I mean, I got a brace, but
yeah.
we expect to, we're hoping to get it be completely back to regular walking
and, yeah.
By the 14th.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Don't, yeah. don't do anything weird and dumb at a certain age.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I hike and stuff, but I see guys up there, like, lately, because I'll run down the hill, you know, but, like, you start to realize, so you're very fragile. You get to a certain, you know, you're going to break a hip. You know, it's a joke, but we're at the hip-breaking point now. I am, anyways. I don't know how old you are.
I'm 50. I'll be 53 in June.
Yeah, so we're in hip-breaking zone.
But even go back even before that.
Yeah.
It's like, think about, like, when I did Tigerland with Schumacher, Colin Farrell's first film. It's
yeah.
like, I was the oldest guy. I've looked the youngest.
Right.
My whole family's, like, down the Mexican
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
And I was doing the boot camp.
Well,
I knew I had to do boot camp. I'd already done boot camp for Dead Presidents.
Yeah.
So I was like, hell, I can't look like an old guy, even though I am the oldest. So let me start pre-boot camp at home.
Yeah.
So going hiking high in Griffith Park and all these other places with the 20 pounds on my back.
Oh, really?
And next thing you know, like you said, I'm starting to injure myself because I'm pushing myself. I'm not a boot camp trainer. I'm just doing things that I know I did in boot camp. So I had to go back to my therapist and tighten me up before I actually hit the real boot camp.
A therapist, you mean, is
PT,
that like a trainer?
A physical therapist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're like, you've always been sort of an immersive actor.
Yeah.
You do the whole thing?
Yeah.
You do your own stunts sometimes?
Not all the time.
All the time?
Damn near. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
I've been doing martial arts since I was like 14.
Yeah.
So fighting's a natural thing. I started Muay Thai in 1987.
Really?
Yeah, before people even knew what Muay Thai was.
Yeah.
So from Taekwondo, American Freestyle, Muay Thai, all kinds of weapons, nunchaku, staff, bow, stars.
You can
you
do
name
it? You can
oh,
do
yeah.
stars?
Oh, throwing stars, a belly song. If you had a belly song, right?
So I'm not even sure I know what that is.
The throwing stars?
I know what throwing stars are because I remember Kung Fu when I was a little kid.
Oh, with David Carradine.
Yeah.
Sure. The belly song, butterfly knives.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can do those?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Nunchucks.
Yeah. Nunchucks?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah?
my God.
So have you done any major martial arts movies?
I've been wanting to for a long time. I got really close on a few.
You better get it in now, buddy.
No shit. You are not lying.
Well, time's running out for the martial arts movies.
It's interesting. I've had a few mentors recently talk to me about not doing my stunts. Just one can allege it's
Who?
Random. Sam Jackson.
Yeah. Are you guys your pals?
Oh, he's a father figure to me.
Really?
He's a dear. Yeah, he's the closest thing I got to a dad.
Well, how'd you meet him? Like, which movie?
I did 187 with Kevin Reynolds.
Like, you know, you're one of these guys where you're you know, a real character actor, and you've done a million movies. So everybody sort of knows you.
I just look different. I have to profile people.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, but people must come up to you all the time like, oh, you're that guy.
That guy.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 times it's like, you're that scary guy, right?
Well, you can tell by the look in their eye.
Yeah. Which movie they know you
They're
from?
They're very respectful. I don't get, like I was, I forget when they were, Mila Kunis and I were going to get some coffee and we were just walking and talking shop and stuff. And she's got the crazy fans because of her TV show back in the day.
Yeah,
it was around that time. And then my fans were always very respectful and oftentimes, like, you know, ex-convicts or big motherfuckers. You know
from what movies do you think it was?
Well, when it's that case, it's usually like the 187s or the 999s or the Crank 2.
Right.
Or,
do all of them have numbers in the title?
They're all... It's a wish. They're pretty, just the more violent ones.
Yeah,
Dirty, about when I played it was a Rampart police scandal.
Okay.
That I did with Cuba Gooding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's such a big and vast career you've got going there. But Sam Jackson, so...
So I this is a movie, as you know, it's very rare to shoot in sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning from beginning to end, like page one to the end.
This is 187?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this one we shot in sequence.
Yeah.
So we had 2 weeks of rehearsal. So you get to grow as not only as actors and as friends, but you get to grow as the character in the film and
sure.
the story.
Yeah.
And then by the very end, like I think 2 days before the big finale scene where we've got guns to our head playing Russian roulette, I had to bury my father to a suicide.
Your dad killed himself?
Mm-hmm. Hung himself in a closet. So I had
to. Oh, my God.
So to have a gun to your head 2 days after you buried him is a very surreal thing. And you're going toe to toe with somebody you admire, respect, look up to.
Jackson.
And you're learning from as much as you can. I mean, I stopped smoking weed for that film.
Yeah.
Oh, on day five of rehearsal, he gave me a spanking. I grabbed my bong and I cleaned it out with 420 and I put fresh water and I went and bought flowers at the gas station.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love you, but for the next 3 months, you are now a vase. And I put it on top of my fridge with flowers and it stayed there till the end.
Because Sam told you not to smoke?
Not at all. I just saw how badass he was. He knows everybody's lines.
Yeah.
He reads the script 3 times. He knows everything.
Yeah.
Camera movement, everywhere. And on, so he paced himself 4 days of rehearsal.
Yeah.
On the fifth day of rehearsal was the big finale. And the monologues, the original monologues, were even bigger than what ended up in the movie.
Yeah.
And I watched Samuel just sit there and look at, well, he put his head down. I could tell for the first time I was looking at Samuel, I'm like, wow, he's not paying attention to anybody now. He's like just looking down at this grid. And I said, okay, well, I got a 357. I said, hey, Sam, I just want to show you it's all clear. And he wasn't looking at me.
Yeah.
He's totally ignoring me.
Yeah.
And it's this psych-ops.
Yeah.
I knew what was going on.
Yeah.
So I was like, I said, okay. I said, all right, bro, what's clean? I said, clack. I closed it. You hold the sides in your hands. You're fumbling through. It's rehearsal.
Yeah.
And then Kevin goes, hey, you guys ready? And then Samuel goes, picks up the sides and just throws them on the floor. And he goes, yeah, man. I was like, oh, fuck. I'm holding my sides and my little freaking 357 like a little girl.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, okay. You got bigger speeches than me, but okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, hey, Mr. G, da, da, da. And he just goes, I was a teacher. And his eyes are like, so Samuel can control this eye and this eye from crying.
Oh, yeah.
He can drop one tear, 2 tears, 3
Come
tears.
On.
I swear to God.
Yeah.
Ask him yourself.
Yeah.
There's John Barrymore could do it. And Sam Jackson can do it.
John Barrymore, that's a deep reference.
Yeah, I come from deep roots.
Yeah.
So Samuel was literally holding the tears, and I was so captivated and mesmerized. I was like, I just wanted to apologize for breaking into this. I'm so sorry. Here, I'm sorry, Mr. G. I didn't mean to be a bad dude. But that's not what the dialogue says. So I had to stick to the dialogue.
Right.
But then also, I wanted to step out and just watch the motherfucker act. And I was like, holy shit, this is magic.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I'm like, boom. And then when it was over, like 5 pages, it's very intense.
Yeah.
And then Cameron's all right, man. He goes, what'd you think? I said, what do you mean? What wife? Kevin, didn't you just see what happened?
Yeah.
He chewed me up and spit me out.
Yeah.
I says, well, what do you want to do? I said, can I please just have like, can you please just give me 5, 10 minutes?
Or
10 would be great.
Before you went action.
This is just rehearsals.
Yeah.
We're not even on Warner Brothers yet. We're
really?
In a little room. Oh. Yeah. This is just day 5 of rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yo, Kev, please, can I just please go outside? He goes, yeah. I said, I just, look, I know it's rehearsals, but I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm not gonna be by his side in this scene today. It's not.
Yeah.
I'll be happy just to see the bottom of his souls as he runs way ahead of me.
Yeah.
But at least we'll get some work done.
Right.
Because this is just making me go home and clean my ball and turn it into a vase.
Yeah.
Because I need 3 extra brain cells, 5, 10, 1. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't know how many extra brain cells. I'll take one. If it's one, I'll take it.
So that built the relationship. How did Samuel, handle the situation around your father dying?
He was, hey, I make one phone call, I take care of everything for you.
Really?
Yeah.
In terms of like...
Like a funeral, burial,
shit.
And he was a veteran, so we had a veterans war. And I felt that I had to try to be a man and handle this.
Yeah.
I'm a Clifton Collins Jr.
Yeah.
Even though at that time I was carrying my grandfather's name for film, Gonzalez.
Double Gonzalez.
Yes, sir.
So, but... What was your relationship with your father?
At that particular time, I hadn't been speaking to him for probably 3.5-4 months.
Really?
Yeah, my sister and I would alternate. Yeah, because he was
just two of you?
He was an alcoholic. When I'd gotten this role, I had to like 3 or 4 callbacks. You know, you get another callback and you get another callback.
Right, sure.
You're like, oh my God, I'm that much closer. You get another callback. What, another callback? 3?
Yeah.
You know, like a 4? Right. Like, this is ridiculous. It must be down to me and one other guy or something. You just don't know.
Yeah.
And then I finally told my dad that I got it. He goes, and he was depressed. He was like, oh, that's nothing, son. It's that's just, you know what. I'm like, Dad, I worked so hard for this. This is like a lead up. This is Sam Jackson who's coming off Pulp Fiction. I don't know who that is, son. They're like, yeah, but he's huge. This is like, everybody's watching. He goes, yeah, that's just, that's nothing, son. Da, 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 da.
Oh, really?
I was like, I can't have this negative input when I worked so hard for this. And you know, this is my life. This is what I love to do.
But was that your whole life with the diminishing business?
No, just this particular film. I think his own personal life was in, he was just getting to a depressed stage.
It was his father that was the actor?
Well, no, that was my mother.
Oh, so your dad was like...
He was Collins Sr.
Okay. But your whole life, he was just a boozer?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Was your parents together?
They were together. He left when I was 8 years old. Oh. That's the earliest childhood memory I have, is him leaving.
Really?
Yeah. It's a traumatic episode, the earliest trauma that you have in your childhood.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
But you stayed in touch with him?
He
was around?
He was.
Yeah?
He went to prison for a year for manslaughter.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, did a year for manslaughter.
That doesn't seem like a long time to do for manslaughter.
He was white. White in the 70s.
Did he kill the guy?
Yeah, he did.
What was that about?
He was just drunk driving.
Oh, that's terrible.
And the dude he killed was rich. He was, and my dad was not. He lived in a trailer park.
Really?
Yeah, and he had a genius IQ. He was insanely smart and very
Your dad
witty.
Was?
Yeah.
He just squandered it? Where does he come from? He came from around here? You grew up here?
Yeah, Culver City.
Culver City.
Went to Culver High with my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, my grandparents were probably, in all honesty, probably the first Mexicans to own land in Culver City because it was against the law for Mexicans to own land in, I think, up until 68.
So that's your mom's family?
Yeah, and John Wayne helped them work that loophole. You always got to go to the higher-ups to...
To John Wayne? If you got to go to John Wayne, that's, you know, doesn't get much higher than that.
Nah, next thing you know, Duke makes a call. Next thing you know, my grandpa owns the whole block, a house across the street, an apartment complex Duke. By Veterans Park.
Really?
Yeah, apartment complex. He owned the whole, and his whole block had apartments that he owned. And the four garages that were meant for the apartments, he just filled with old cars.
Really?
He loved working on old cars.
So your mom's dad was like a character actor as well, a studio guy.
He was like a legitimate vaudevillian, one of the first studio. He was the first, I think, one of the studio players, Latino.
Right. And how'd your mom get tied up with your old dad?
Culver High.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so they were high school sweethearts?
Yeah. And also, to get out of the house, you had to get married.
And that was, so she got married when she was a kid?
She didn't want to get the fuck out of the house.
Right.
She was like, and she's confessed, she's like, look, honestly, part of it was like, I just wanted to get out of the house.
Yeah.
I'm like, that doesn't help me.
How old was she when she had you?
I think 25.
Oh, okay.
And my dad was a little younger.
Yeah. So your dad was just a boozy ne'er-do-well?
He was just a real smart, he was boozy, drank a bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, there were days where he'd come to pick us up on a Saturday morning and just be shit-plowed. My grandma would be like, no, Kip, you're not taking the kids.
And really?
Then, oh, yeah. My grandma. He got pulled over two blocks in a residential neighborhood in the 70s for not wearing a seatbelt. Mm. So you know you got to be driving squirrely in a residential area.
To get pulled over.
In the 70s?
Yeah. What did he do for jobs?
Printing. He worked in the printing industry.
Yeah.
With printing stuff. But then he learned how to work. I mean, he had a genius IQ, so he learned how to work the system.
Yeah.
And veteran benefits and all this other stuff. But then he would help people in the trailer park with their issues. And I feel like he had a stronger purpose whenever he was helping other people.
Yeah.
Because at his funeral, I had all these people coming up to me. Goes, he helped me with this. He helped me with that. Or the
paperwork.
They were trying to take
stuff.
My land. Or they were trying to take my trailer. They were trying to this. And your dad helped me get some money. And I was like, wow, he helped a lot of you guys.
But he wasn't college educated or anything?
No.
Huh. Just knew numbers?
He just knew how to work a lot of things. He could build
gambler?
Stuff. Yes.
Yeah?
That ties into Jockey because that ending speech in Jockey is very much my childhood with him because on those weekends that he did show up to pick us up, because sometimes he just wouldn't show up and just leave us at our grandparents. There's like one out of three times I'd say he wouldn't show up.
Yeah.
So oftentimes my weekend would be just going across the street to the liquor store, picking up racing forms. He taught me how to pick the horses, the weight, conditions, jockey, this, that. He taught me all that.
When you're how old?
Nine.
So you knew that shit
Yeah.
going into that movie. Yeah. It was in your blood.
Yeah.
But But you weren't a jockey, but you understood the weight that was on jockeys.
Oh yeah, for sure, 100.
Yeah.
So he would get a couple things of booze. He'd meet his other trailer park friends from various trailer parks, and then we'd walk to Hollywood Park.
Yeah.
He lived in Inglewood.
Yeah.
And we'd walk. That was like
the day.
Yeah. Him getting plowed with his friends while I'm gambling on a horse trying to win money because I really need dough at 9 years old.
Yeah. How'd you do? How'd he do? Was he good at it?
Was I good at it?
Well, no. I had nine.
I was the one picking the horses.
Oh, you were?
He taught me how to read the program.
Oh, that's funny.
So he was just busy drinking with his friends. He'd sit there while he'd gamble. He'd bet a couple things, but I remember I knew when he would win because we would have a good Christmas. My sister and I would get.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was on like one time.
You know, the horses is such a classic, debauchery. You know, it's a classic gambling. Like, guys who they go to the horses. I don't have the gambling thing.
I don't either.
You know, but I wish I did because guys who are on the horse, they love it. But I mean, it destroys their life. But they love it.
Yeah.
Just go spend the day at the horse track.
I got to tell you, in Northern Phoenix at Turf Paradise, it was really interesting.
When you were shooting the movie?
For sure. It was a live track.
Yeah.
So we were shooting while there was real races going on.
Oh, yeah.
And when you get into the VIP room,
yeah,
it was like, wow, you guys spent all your money to be in this VIP. It's like Vegas minus the hot girls and minus the optimism of winning because it's very drab and dismal. And
yeah.
You just feel like the dregs of humanity. Like later in the evening before the last race, you got the hardcore gamblers that gamble around the world on the TVs.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and yeah. Just so it's
there's no real food. It's very like.
Not a fun atmosphere.
Oh, my God. It was like,
yeah, it's a sickness, dude. But that movie was great. I mean, I really thought it was a great film.
Thank you, brother.
And I thought it was deep, and I thought, it looked like you did some fucking real work.
I got dropped to 143.
You wrote that movie?
I wrote pieces of it.
Yeah.
I sat every morning and did rewrites with the director and producer.
Oh, okay.
And that whole monologue at the end, I rewrote that morning.
Pulled it right from your dad?
Well, it's funny because we were very consistent in the rewrites and the changes that we were doing up until the very end where I kept waiting. I was anxious, like when are we going to get this rewrite? Like, we've been talking about this. And then finally I get it, and it was a very different ending. There was no monologue. It was both of us losing and both of us.
Both you and the not son.
Yeah. Well, we're just watching it in silence. I'm like, that's so anticlimactic. But we didn't build the film for an anticlimactic. That's a very mechanical thing, and it's hard to pull off.
Yeah.
You got to be like a Petra Volpe or something like that to pull
off. The ending now is like a passing of the baton. Right.
Yeah. And that whole speech, too. It's like I wrote six different versions of that speech from 6:30 in the morning to like 8:15 a.m. And they're like, oh, my God, can we take these? I got photos because they love it when they see shit all over the floor because, I'm just like mad scientist. Like, oh, shit, Clinton's got some shit for us.
Yeah.
So they took, can we take it? I'm like, please, just take it. And out of that, they carved out, they took pieces and they put that into the monologue. And I read it and I'm like, oh, all this pays off and works. Let's go shoot and have a great day.
So, it was one of those movies where it's tight, it's specific. It's a movie about aging and about despair in a way, and about whether a life was wasted or not. And then there's hope and then there isn't. And then, but to do it in that world, which is such an odd world, to be a jockey, what did you do? Did you go meet with jockeys?
I spent every day with them.
Yeah.
Every day. Oh, I told him. I said, look.
Are those real jockeys in the movie?
Oh, yeah. All of them. There is just Moises Arias, who's amazing, plays my son.
And he's a jockey?
No. He's a fantastic actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he seems, he was real good, yeah.
And my main girl. But everybody else was either, they were all from the track.
Yeah.
So day one, and this is my second film with Greg and Clint.
Yeah.
We did Transpecos, which won the audience award at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
So they already knew how I flowed and how I did rewrites. And that's
what
they expected.
This is the director and the producer?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And Greg Quidar directed that one.
Yeah.
And Clint Bentley produced it.
Yeah.
And then on Jockey, they switched roles.
Right.
And Clint directed and Greg produced.
Yeah.
So I told they knew I'd want to be there early because that's just the way I roll. They knew I'd want to hang out. And we stayed at like a a Courtyard Marriott, a real dingy place, which is perfect. You don't want to stay at a Four Seasons. That just doesn't fit with an
No.
You don't.
And also, budget-wise, it helps.
Well, yeah, because we had $350,000 for this movie.
You can stay at the Marriott Courtyard.
Yeah.
You can frame it however you want, but we're not paying for the other one.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I wouldn't want to stay there.
Sure, I get it.
And I drove out there from L.A.
To Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. And I brought my clothes. You said, Andy, bring your clothes, sure, you know, and all this stuff. So I brought all that stuff out, and I told the jocks, I said, look, man, I know you guys are probably fans of some of my stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't want you guys to be shy. I'm here to help you guys.
Yeah.
If you need me to shovel shit, wash your horse.
Right.
Anything you guys need me to do, I'm just going to be picking up game and hanging out.
Was this the first time, like, you know, actively around horses?
No. Westworld.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I did a pilot where I was a jockey. I was a cartel owner.
Yeah.
And I owned my own jockey, my horse.
Yeah.
One of those thoroughbreds.
Yeah.
And that horse took off on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a...
What movie was that?
It was a pilot that never got picked up.
Oh.
Yeah.
But so, all right, so you tell these jockeys, you know, I'm in, I'm of you, whatever I need. And what'd they make you do? Were you shoveling shit pretty quick?
No, I think there were two. I just wanted the whole... I just didn't want to be viewed as an actor. I want to be viewed as a friend and an employee or just a partner.
Sure.
And I'm there to help them.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear some stories about a movie, please ask me. I'd love to share.
Yeah.
And don't be shy about anything.
Did they?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What'd they want to hear about?
I think Boondock Saints was a good one.
Yeah.
Crank 2 was a good one. Oh, what else came up?
I think the one I remember the most is Traffic for some reason.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun one, too.
But that's heavy, man.
Yeah. Yeah, Frankie Flowers, the gay assassin, and he was not happy.
Yeah. But like...
not gay, pre-gay.
Yeah. It was like, it was a crazy character. And, you know, when they beat you down, the way you played that was so devastating.
It was, I remember the AD coming to my trailer. Oh, yeah. Mr. Collins, we're getting ready to shoot this scene. I said, yes, I'm aware. Thank you.
Yeah.
He goes, how do you want to do it? I says, what do you mean? I says, what do you want to wear? I said, well, the scene seat here says I'm naked in a chair. Right. Well, Steven wants to know, what do you want to wear? I'm like, the scene says I'm naked in the chair. Well, do you want a thong? Do you want a cover? No, it's Soderbergh. Yeah. I want to be naked. You know, I want to be naked. I'm not, you know, this isn't.
You're not afraid.
You know, this isn't Magic Mike or anything. It's like, let's make this right, dude.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And you did it?
Yeah, it was funny because my manager called me like 2 weeks later to sign a nudity waiver.
Yeah.
and then when he found out from production, I'd already signed it without him looking at it or anything.
Yeah,
so I said, it's fucking Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to sign it. I don't care what that thing says.
You got to do it.
I want to do it.
Yeah.
It's like you're going to have to stop me from not doing it.
Yeah.
Unless Steven has his reasons, then I'll listen to him.
You respect that guy.
I love him. I love and respect him. Wherever, if you want to steer me into a wall, there's a reason for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to go right into it.
But you don't feel that about all directors.
No, sir. I didn't do any of the, do you want to be in this scene for Tigerland?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, I've got to cry in the next scene, so I'd like to go back to bed. These other guys, it's their first film, so they've got to pay their dues and do the shower scene, the unwritten shower scene in Tigerland, because in Vietnam, people didn't really take showers. That's the whole thing about Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here, shower scene number 7.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, because it was really early. It was so cold in Camp Blanding, Florida.
Yeah.
And I had a heavy, heavy scene. So, you know, you kind of psych yourself out. You go to these places.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, Colin Farrell and all these other cats have to do this scene. And I'm not in it, so I can rest and get to that place.
Yeah.
And then I hear, I said, oh, fuck. I'm like, Mr. Colin, like, yeah. He goes, because I play Private Miter. Like, Miter, I said, you want to be in the scene? I'm like, do I want to be in the scene? I was sleeping, brother. I got this fucking big ass. Are we on my scene right now? The one where I break down?
Yeah.
It's like, no. It's just a scene they decided to add. I'm like, a scene they decided to add.
Yeah,
Is it a shower scene? Well, you know, Colin Farrell's doing it and so-and-so's doing it. So, right, but they have to. I don't. I auditioned for this film. No, I have a big scene coming. I need to focus for it. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Please don't ever knock on my door for any additional scenes of the sort.
No, and what do you attribute that to?
Attribute what?
The adding scenes and expecting you to do it. Is that a director decision? Is that?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, your mind can wander wherever it wants to, and I'm sure we could all figure it out. But although I adored Joel, I had fun working with him.
And but with Jockey, this was sort of a passion project.
Yes, without a doubt. And also Clint Bentley, and Greg Queter, they're like brothers to me. I love them
really?
So much. They've got so much respect for craft. And,
yeah.
And they're such amazing, open hearted, generous collaborators.
Yeah. And it did well at the festivals, right?
Oh yeah, I won Best Actor at Sundance. I got nominated for Independent Spirit Award.
But nothing from the Oscars?
No, nothing from the Oscars. We were hoping for that. And
yeah.
they were optimistic at a point, but...
Did they pay for any juice? Seems like you got to pay for the juice.
It does, doesn't it? I'm learning. I'm learning this after 30 years. Yeah,
except for that movie I was in with Andrea Riseborough, where, you know, her friends just got on board.
To Leslie.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
So she reminded me of my dad.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no. Dude, I swear to God, Leslie killed that. Leslie had such beautiful nuances and tics.
Yeah.
That I was watching it going, okay, either one, you're a recovering addict, or two, you have a relative that was an alcoholic, or three, you went to AA and you studied people.
Yeah.
There were some beautiful, I was just like, I was kind of jealous.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's such a good choice. Like, oh, where'd she come up with
She's
that?
She's good, right?
She's insane in it.
Yeah.
But yes, so, and you saw all the hoopla that came from it, but also it's not backed by a giant studio.
Right.
So
or a big consulting firm or any sort of publicity, you know.
It just feels like...
I think that's going to happen more now.
I think so, too. It just feels... I started to feel... It seemed like the curtain was opening a little bit. Like,
well, it just seems like if you can figure out whatever... Do by whatever means necessary, rally people to your movie. The big problem is too much shit, and nobody watches a lot of shit, and these consultants and publicists just force the shit down the pipe, and people are like, I didn't see it, but it must be good because I like her or whatever. But then, like, somehow or another, she rallied people to watch the movie. You know, she acted the fuck out of that
thing. Was mesmerized. I was mesmerized.
Yeah.
Literally. And again, she reminded me of my dad. So it's like to have those, because, you know, you could do the usual drunk thing. There's been drunks throughout, you know.
She didn't do any of the usual drunk things.
No, exactly. That's what made her so mesmerizing.
It was wild, dude.
It was beautiful.
Because, like, you know, when you're at that level of alcoholism, you're not going to be like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're just in a different zone. You've adapted to most of it.
But
it's a minor shift.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Fuck, dude. But like so what happened with Jockey? Did you get mad?
No, I'm not going to get mad. It's funny. I had this conversation with Samuel and
he's your counsel.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
My go-to guy. And I said, in all honesty, I was just happy to have a seat at the table, truth told.
Yeah.
Like, that's Independent Spirit Awards.
Right, but you want people to see the fucking movie. That's the other thing. It's like, that's the weird thing. Like, even like, I was talking to Tim Blake Nelson.
I love Tim.
Yeah,
love
you've worked with him before.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. What movies?
Nightmare Alley.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I wanted to do the Western with him because Posse was a friend of mine. And when he called me, I was like, oh, man, I'd love to do this.
Which one? Old Henry?
Yes. But I know Potsy. I've known Potsy from the country.
Who's Potsy?
Potsy's the director.
Okay.
From the country music world.
Okay.
Because I directed Chicken Fried for Zac Brown, and we won a CMT award.
Oh, you're a video director.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I met. That's where I first met Potsy. So we stayed in touch. He'd crash at my house, and he called me to tell me about this film. And then we got Tim Blake. I'm like, oh, fuck. I mean, Tim Blake's a beast.
He is, right?
Oh, he's a beast. He's freaking insanely talented.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can feel it.
And a good dude, and a good dude. Oh, yeah.
Very good dude.
You watch him, you're just captivated instantly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but you've worked with some big directors, man. Right?
Yes, sir.
You've worked with all of Inarritu. Is that how you
say loved him, yeah, on Babel.
Yeah, that movie's another one. Like, between Traffic and Babel, those are big pieces, man.
That was another piece I rewrote, too.
You did?
I did, because I remember when he called me, I was doing this indie in Louisiana called Little Chenier.
Yeah.
And I was playing Cajun. I was playing Cajun there in the South Bayous there. When he called me, I had to talk to him on the phone. And then he calls me and he's, ah, Clifton, this piece, I love you for this role. And he was basing it on another audition that Francine Maisler had done. He showed him something. It was completely not really related to a Border Patrol agent.
Yeah.
But he saw it and he wanted me. So he pitched it like the opening scene to Midnight Express with Brad Davis.
Yeah.
With the tension and the hash and the guys are coming onto the plane and beautiful. Like,
on the bus. Wasn't it a bus?
Was it the bus?
Where were he pulling opening? The hash off?
Yeah,
him?
Yeah, 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 yeah. So he's... Beat by beat, he's painting this picture for me. I said, I love it. And he goes, you know, the movie with the man with the hat. I'm like, oh, yeah. Midnight Express goes, yes. The actor, Brad David goes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like literally finishing his sentences.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I said, Alejandro, mire, I said, this is a beautiful scene, but that's not the scene in your screenplay.
Yeah.
He goes, I'll come on your right. He goes, I'll fix it for you. And Alejandro's filled with so much damn passion,
he
cannot say no.
Yeah.
If you're that passionate, I want to jump on a boat and be as passionate as you and help fulfill your passion.
Yeah.
That's how you feel. It's a team effort.
Yeah.
So we get there, and I've got a lot of police resources and stuff. So
you do?
Yeah, that was the ride to hell. That was so scary.
What?
Because I get to LAX. They want to fly me coach. I'm like, wait a minute, Brad Pitt's in this movie. What do you mean I'm flying coaches?
Yeah.
They've never flown me coach on any movie.
Yeah.
Something's going on. Oh, it's a Mexican movie. I called my new managers. Oh, you got to watch out, dude. It's my people.
Yeah,
they're like, well, you're overreacting. I'm like, no, I'm not. Dot the I's and cross the T's. We about to hit a shitstorm.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Calm down, Clifton. Yeah. So I'm at Tucson Airport. It's tiny.
Yeah.
Like, when you get there, they'll be waiting for you. I said, great. I get there.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, guys, where's my driver? I'm like, oh, they said they're there. They've been there. I'm like, okay, so you do a 360, and you can see all the windows. Like, okay, they're not here.
Yeah.
I wait 30 more minutes.
Yeah.
They finally show up. This girl shows up, this overweight, bigger Mexican woman, probably in her 60s. Looks like she's ready to go to a quinceañera. So much makeup, so much perfume.
Yeah.
And then they throw me in a white van with no windows that I'm sure is used by the cartels for kidnappings when it's not a production van.
Right.
I'm positive. Because the inside was really grimy. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, people tried to get out of this before.
Come on.
So I'm telling you, this is what it looked like.
Yeah.
And she's in the front passenger seat with the window open, and we're driving. I'm like, I thought I could get some food at the airport, but no, because it's so small.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're driving. Maybe we'll stop and get some food. I notice that the road is straight, nothing but cactuses and rocks.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy shit. So now it's starting to, I see the bars on my phone starting to go away.
Yeah.
Like, there is no food coming up anytime soon. I say, how far is the border? Like, 3 hours. I say, oh my God. I say, what about food? Like, there's nothing from here to there. I'm like,
so they flew you into Tucson to drive you to Mexico?
To Puerto Peñasco.
Yeah.
Which now they have an airport there, so you can fly into, but at the time they did not.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm like, fine, I'll wait to get
and
to the motherland.
She's working for the production.
Yeah, you would think maybe not. Like, maybe they snuck her in somehow.
Yeah.
And I got to smell her perfume the whole time.
Yeah.
And I'm watching my bars disappear.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, if a tire blows, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a bag of, like, nuts and raisins that I won't tell them I have.
Yeah.
And I'll escape.
Yeah.
And I'll go back. I already had a plan.
Get out.
If we roll and the tire blows, because I won't have a signal.
Wow.
So I finally get there. I get to the hotel, like, ah, Mr. Collins, you're not supposed to be here for another week. Okay, well, here I am. So what do we do? I do not know. I'm like, okay, please.
Who's this? Who's talking to you now?
The head of the owner or the person at the hotel.
Yeah.
I'm like, so. Okay.
You got a room? Yeah.
I'm like, here I am. So they put me in a room. There's no welcome basket. There's no script. There's no per diem. The phone cables are yanked out of the wall.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm Mexican. So I'm like, I can fix this.
Yeah.
So I start reconnecting the wires.
Yeah.
And I get some kind of signal and it's still not working. So I go now. So you got to put money down. I
was like,
here's my credit card. No credit card. Okay. Where's the ATM? No ATM. What? No ATM. Do you got room service? No room service. Like, what? What the fuck's going on here?
Yeah.
Where's Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Where the fuck's Brad? So then they go, they finally get me the, so I give them $50 and they charge the fuck out of me. I call my manager, like, yo, you have to change Verizon before you cross into Mexico.
Yes.
You can't do it once you get there.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't work once I got there.
Yeah.
So now I'm sure now it's different, but at the time, so I finally get a script, and I go to Alejandro, and he goes, oh, my God, he goes, you're right, I was supposed to fix that. He goes, oh, I didn't. And I was like, that's cool. Well, he was busy, and I saw how slammed he was. So I let 3 days pass, and then I'd already shot him some versions of it that he liked. I said, dude, do you want me to just kind of tighten it up and write some shit? And, like, it goes, like, X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, God, could you? I'm like, fuck, don't worry, dude. Just keep doing what you're doing, bro.
Yeah.
And what you see in the movie, even you'll hear me repeat some dialogue, which is very typical of just police procedural.
Yeah.
Is very simple, short commands.
Right.
No monologues.
Right.
It's like, you know, stand up, sit down, hands up, hands down. Nothing to confuse people.
Yeah.
So that's why you'll hear me repeat stuff, because when we finished that scene, he said, just repeat what you're saying. I'm like, cool, okay.
Yeah.
So we did, and all that dialogue is the shit that I still have the writing at home. I keep all my stuff that I rewrite at home.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just for the
Jim Sheridan's films, Brothers. I wrote a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and you keep it just for
the
papers.
It's just,
when the papers go to the whoever gets your estate, the library that gets all the papers.
Perhaps.
But like Pitt's whole, his section was totally different, right?
Yeah.
It was a different, like almost a different story in a different
place.
It wasn't Mexico, was it?
Nope. I had Gael Garcia on my end, and
I had some
great people. But it was just getting there was... was just like a very
it's crazy.
It gets worse. It gets way worse.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And what, but this, but why be, was that, it wasn't his first movie, was it?
No, no.
It was just the way it worked?
It's just, anytime my people are involved, you can expect.
But that's not always true. I mean, I can't imagine that Del Toro.
Oh, you're right. No, no, no. The exceptions of Del Toro, with the top, yeah, no, no, no.
Because now those guys are friends, and they are the big Mexican directors,
right?
For sure,
yeah.
But Del Toro, yeah. But Del Toro seems very organized,
and
dude.
Cuaron.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Oh, Del Toro is meticulous.
like, I've talked to that guy.
I love Guillermo. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I told him, I said, dude, I love you so much, you almost turned me gay.
Yeah.
That's how much I love you.
Yeah. He's like, so. He's so, like, meticulous, yeah.
And passion.
Right, they're both very passionate, but it's different, right? It's a different type of passion.
Alejandro's a little more rascally.
Right, but
like
he's
Latino,
like—
Latino rascally?
Right, but he also seems like he's a guy that's dealing with the whole world. And it seems like Del Toro's the guy that's dealing with film. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
They're both passionate, but like, you know, Del Toro's a total film nerd. And it seems like, how do you say his name, Iñárritu?
I don't have Mexican, and I desecrated it.
It feels to me like, you know, it's like film never existed. You know, he's inventing film every time he does it.
Well, he did stray from his genres in that last film.
Yeah.
Bardo's.
Yeah, I couldn't get through it.
Oh, I loved it so much.
I got to try again.
Oh, my God. It's just so abstract, so wonderfully and poetically abstract.
I love The Revenant. Oh. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah, I love that, too.
That's fucking crazy.
Oh, boy. Well, it's like, I thought about that a couple weeks ago. I thought, damn, they really made Leo work for that Oscar. Not like he wasn't deserving before for so many performances, but this one of all, like, they really made him work his ass.
And that off. Everyone in that was pretty good. What was his name? Is it Tom? What's it?
Tom Hardy?
Tom Hardy. Yeah. Was like, that guy is,
I take
like
his work.
What the fuck is going on with that guy?
Yeah, he's a beast.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
but a beast, in the way that you respect, and the way
you
are, where you disappear into these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where did that role even come from?
Right. How about Bronson?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bronson's something I watch every so often.
What's it? Which one's that?
Bronson's where he plays that famous inmate from, is it England? Yeah, England.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen it.
Oh, it's a magical indie. Oh, my God. It'll blow. Yeah. If you were impressed by his work as an older actor, watch his stuff when he's young. Bronson is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
How good he is. I swear, you will just be, I've probably watched the film 5 times.
Yeah,
it's just mesmerizing, and it's a prison, so they don't speak to the general prison tropes.
Yeah,
and it gets very also abstract at times.
Yeah,
not on the Bardos. Well, kind of. Yeah, when you watch it, you'll see, and they just do some beautiful. They take some artistic liberties that play so well into the psyche of what's going on to somebody that's been incarcerated for so long.
Wow, what's his name again?
Bronson.
Yeah, what's the name of the actor?
Tom Hardy?
Yeah, Hardy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brain's going. I watched some one where, like, I'm trying to, he's like, I don't even know, like, in the Revenant, mm-hmm. like, what accent was that?
Right, that's a good question. But also, you got to remember the time period. So the accents change, and we don't have access to actual recordings of those accents.
Well, then he did that weird Capone movie.
Right. That was a stinker.
Locke is the one. Locke is the movie I was thinking of.
It's called Locke?
It's called Locke.
Oh, wow.
And Olivia Colman's in it.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird little indie movie. And, you know, it's kind of a trip. It deals with a guy who has a one night stand, and he's like, you know, you should watch it. It's all him.
It's called Locke.
Locke. Okay. It's all him.
Okay, I'll probably watch it today.
Like in
home.
A car.
I'll probably watch when I get home.
Like, it's kind of a crazy movie.
It sounds fun.
But so when you work with Guillermo on Nightmare Alley, you did 2 movies with him, right?
Pacific Rim.
Yeah, but Nightmare Alley, this is like coming full circle around to, you know, your heritage.
Yes, sir.
And your grandfather.
Yes, sir.
It's very interesting because, like, you know, when I was looking around and I looked up your grandfather, is that there's something similar about the nature of your careers in that, you know, not so much, I don't know his acting work, but he did a lot of movies and he did a shit ton of little television. And he's just a working actor at some point, right? And it was sort of interesting that, you know, it skipped a generation, I guess, but, you know, here you are having a similar life. right?
It's true. With the exceptions of he did a lot of, because he came from a vaudevillian background.
So you drew from that for your role in Nightmare Alley?
I actually learned a lot about it because I had started doing research and starting to kind of gather information to write his life story.
Really?
Yeah, and then Guillermo just put accelerant on it.
Did he know your grandfather's work?
He knows his work. He knows the history.
And, really?
And more so, he sold the importance to me. He sat me down one day. We had dinner in his apartment just two doors down from mine. Everybody had left already. You know, like Perlman had left and Willem Dafoe had left. Everybody had left. It was just Guillermo, me, and his girl.
Yeah.
And he sat me down. He wanted to watch the Jockey trailer, so we watched it.
Yeah.
And we'd been drinking a little bit of wine and cheese. And then he sits down, he goes, Clifferton, which he likes to call me Clifferton.
Yeah.
He goes, Clifferton, cabrón, mira. He goes, you and your family, your legacy, mira, cabrón. He goes, you're like the pinche Latino Barrymore family, cabrón. And I said, no, I'm not worthy of that. That's not.
Yeah.
He goes, no, cabrón. He goes, you are. And he leans forward and he points. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
But he leans forward like he's going to lay hands on me. And I said, okay. I put my hands up. Okay,
yeah,
I am.
Yeah.
I am. I said, but wouldn't that make me Drew Barrymore?
Yeah.
He's like, cabrón, you're right, but you can be whoever you want. I said, great, maybe I'll be a Grandpa Barrymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Great Grandpa Barrymore.
Yeah.
Because Ethel started in vaudeville as well.
There was Ethel and Lionel and John.
Ethel and John.
I think that was the big three there,
that
right?
That was the big three. You're absolutely right.
So, but you had more family that was in movies?
No, but they were all part of the carpa scene. And carpa is Spanish for ragtop. And
yeah.
The carpa scene was the basically Mexican ragtop in Texas.
What does that mean? That traveling show?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it was a tent that you could put up and put down and go to the next location.
And that was your grandfather. That's how he started?
That's how my great-grandmother started.
Your great-grandmother.
In Mexico. And then she had to escape when Pancho Villa declared war. Because
So Guillermo knew about your great-grandmother?
He knew. He had ideas. He didn't really know.
Uh-huh.
But since then, the research, I've found information in different artists' books, speaking about my great grandmother, my great uncle, my great aunt.
They were all in that, in the carpa? Right,
yeah, all of them were. They were from the carpa.
So they were carnies.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
But my great grandfather on my mother's side was a medicine man, a contortionist. He would find the location, get the paperwork done. So you did a lot of stuff. And in these situations, you often had two other entertainers that could do your routine in case you get sick or whatever.
Right.
So they could fill in for you.
So that was sort of part of Nightmare Alley, passing on.
So as I was learning, they were kind of coming together.
At the same time, coincidentally.
Yeah, coincidentally, 100%, Mark. That's one can argue a coincidence.
Yeah,
is
sure.
It really coincidence? That's where I feel like something else is.
I get
like,
that
okay,
sometimes.
Okay, stop. Like, I've got enough signs. Like,
sure.
It gets creepy
sure.
sometimes.
Yeah.
It gets, not sometimes, it gets creepy a lot.
It gets creepy a lot until it goes away, and then you're like,
it's still beautiful creepy, though.
Did I fuck up? Why am I, where's the creepiness?
No, no. Well, I'm already in gay. I'm not going to stop because the voice. Or the things.
So that's your great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. So your grandfather started in that world as a kid?
Yes. My great-grandfather, both my great-grandfathers and both my great-grandmothers.
So,
on my grandpa's side and my grandma's side.
But this is all through your mother's family?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Micaela was my grandfather's mother.
Yeah.
And she was related to General Huerta. So she was Micaela Huerta Gonzalez.
Wow.
And that's Pancho Villa's sworn enemy.
Yeah.
And she was dancing for Pancho's men.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
In the theater.
Yeah.
And the carpas.
Yeah.
So when when Pancho Villa declared war, she's like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Because he's going to kill me once they find out I'm related to Huerta.
Yeah.
So she bounced and came to Texas.
Yeah.
At 17.
Yeah.
And you didn't need a passport back then. So
right.
You paid a nickel. Nickel was the ongoing bribe.
Yeah.
And I remember asking my grandma about this. Hey, grandma, tell me about the thing and the nickel and the bribing and this. And was it like the, Harriet Tubman's Underground Railroad? She goes, no, mijo, it wasn't nothing like that.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean nothing like that? No, I just got in line and gave him a nickel. Like, that's so not cinematic.
Yeah.
So boring. Like, it was just an open,
no menace.
Corrupt bribe. No menace. No menace. Yeah.
Come on in.
Yeah, pretty much. Nickel. Give me a nickel.
Yeah. So, but your grandfather... Like, he was like a studio actor, wasn't he?
And he couldn't read.
But he was used in Westerns.
Yeah, John, he was under Bat Jack Productions, which was Duke's company.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. So he did Rio Bravo, High and the Mighty, Strange Lady in Town. He'd lend them out to other corporate or other, you know, other actors that had their own production companies.
Yeah.
Like when he did work with Glenn Ford in The Sheep Men or Greer Garson in Strange Lady in Town. Or,
and what are these parts? Because I can't, like, I saw Rio Bravo, but, like, are they just the Mexican parts? Like, well, slightly stereotyped?
Not Rio Bravo.
No.
You know, he owned the hotel.
Oh, okay.
And he brought Duke all the ammo at the end with the shotgun.
Oh, okay.
And he got in a fight, and he's the one that puts the blouse up to Duke.
Duke would
just take him off the leash. Duke just love to have him around.
Yeah. You know? So he was buddies with John Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Once Duke saw him on the Groucho Marx show, and then William Morris signed him, he did one film. He did the first 3D Western with Van Heflin called Wings of the Hawk.
Yeah.
And then after that, that's when Duke called.
And,
said, I want to put him under contract for like 10 years.
Wild.
Yeah.
And that's where he did all the film and TV work, because he was on Bonanza, and he was working for Duke.
Yeah, and Duke's brother directed him something. Robert Wayne directed him something I found called
No
The Vault.
Shit. Yeah?
Yeah.
So you're doing all this research, and you're finding all this out, and you're watching all the... You could probably see most of the stuff, most of the TV stuff even too, right?
Not just yet, but I'm slowly getting my hands on some of it. I got a hold of the Jimmy Durante that he did with Robert Mitchum.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
What is that?
It's
a Jimmy Durante show?
Yes.
A variety show?
Yes.
No shit.
Oh, I got to send it to you.
Really?
Because it's not on YouTube, but I have it.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And he did Groucho Marx's show?
Groucho Marx.
So he's a real guy.
Yeah. He's the only... Groucho gave him a book, which my grandpa couldn't read, but I read. And he's the only person that he mentions out of the whole show. It helped raise his ratings because he was going to go off the air.
Oh, really?
He called Walter O'Keefe, who had a TV show. Not a TV show. He had a radio show. Because, you know, from like 45 to 55, radio was like the big entertainment. So Walter O'Keefe had a show called Double or Nothing.
Ah.
I believe it was on NBC. And Groucho called me and said, I need some help, man. I said, my ratings are going down.
Yeah.
They're saying I'm too hard on the customers. And I need some help.
Yeah.
Can you help me, buddy?
Yeah. And he got your granddaddy?
Well, he did. Walter O'Keefe had done, he emceed a charity event for cerebral palsy at WOAI radio station in San Antonio, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And my grandfather worked there.
Uh-huh.
So he did everything. He was crew guy, camera guy, ran cables, would pick up money, would do the show, the Dude Ranch show.
Yeah.
He would do the comedian stuff. He would act. He did everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wild. So, and did he, you had a relationship with him, your grandfather?
He was more of a dad than my dad was, yeah.
So you were able to go right to the source for all this stuff,
yes.
A lot of it.
Well, actually, Joe Mantegna got me recording interviews on my grandfather probably 30 years ago.
How did Joe Mantegna get you to do it? He told you
he was
to
like,
do it?
He goes, Cliffy, he goes, you know, your grandpa's a legend, a legacy. You know, he's filled with stories that you gotta get all that stuff on tape.
Yeah.
You gotta record it. So Joey kind of stayed on me for a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm like, fine, Uncle Joey, fine, I will.
Yeah.
So, and I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't till the end of Nightmare Alley that for some reason I remembered that I videoed him. So, because I had about 7 hours of interviews from my grandmother. Because once that night that Guillermo told me that, I went back to my room and I went through all the hours of grandma and I made all these index cards.
Yeah.
And when I finished, I went to bed.
Yeah.
And then when I woke up, I realized, like, oh my God, I did those videos that Joey had me do.
Yeah.
So I got to go find
30
those.
Years ago?
97, 98.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow. And he found him?
Yes, sir. I knew I knew they were in two places.
Yeah.
It's one of two places.
Yeah.
And I went and I found them.
Wow.
Got them all. Yes, sir. So.
So what are you going to do with all this stuff? What are you going to do with your grandfather's life?
Well, I'm making the origin story. It's
you kind of look like him, right?
That's what everybody keeps telling me. I've been trying to ignore it, but it's.
You're going to play him?
Yeah. You see, I'm kind of hesitant. I know once I hop the fence.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been practicing his frying pans.
What do you mean frying pans?
Oh, well, that was one of his gigs. He because they were so poor, he'd take bottles and fill them with water and hang them.
Yeah.
I've got a picture.
Hang them?
Yeah, from an old lead pipe.
Yeah, okay.
Which I have the original lead pipe in my garage.
Okay.
And he would fill them with water.
Yeah.
And at a young age, from the age of 7, he started learning this.
It's like a vaudeville trick.
It was.
Yeah.
And then the frying pans, he had 24 skillets.
Yeah.
And
he'd play those?
Yeah, he'd play them and he'd bend the tail or he'd bend the handle to change the pitch.
Yeah.
And also with the hammer he learned later.
Yeah.
Which was hell on the family, probably at least the last 15 years of his life because his hearing was going.
Uh-huh.
And so he would do shows like twice a year, like in Wilcox, Arizona. He'd do the Rex Allen days or, you know, he was they still loved him at these certain places.
Yeah.
And they'd ask him. So you always knew when that time was coming because you hear him banging on these panes. Like, bang, 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 bang. Bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
Bang, bang, bang. And it's real fucking loud.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like, oh, the Wilcox days has come. Like, yeah, yeah, your grandpa's tuning up the pans. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, grandpa, you need a hearing aid. No, you're crazy. You don't need a hearing aid. We heard that for years.
And his whole life in Culver City?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
And the family still got the property?
Just sold it not that long ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Was that sad?
It was sad. It was sad. Yeah, because yeah. I grew up in that home, and I tap danced in that home from a young kid's age.
You were a tap dancer?
Oh, yeah, I'm a hoofer.
Yeah?
Your grandpa got me hoofing.
Really? He did that too?
Oh, yeah, he did. Oh, he would steal steps. He would steal steps all the time. He'd watch the Nicholas Brothers in New York at like 17 years old.
Oh, back in the day.
Because he got married. My grandma was 15. He was 17, and they hit the road, and they went on tour.
Did vaudeville.
Yeah. Went to New York to perform at the Hispano Theater.
Yeah.
With this woman.
So he was watching those guys.
Oh, yeah. He would just watch and
see. They all knew each other?
I don't know if that he knew them.
So there's a separate Mexican vaudeville or a Latino vaudeville?
Uh-huh.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. The Carpas. There's a black one, and there's a Chinese one as well.
Right. The Carpas, is that what it's called?
Well, for the Chinese.
But that was like, that was
Texas.
That was essentially Mexican vaudeville?
Pretty much.
And it would tour as such?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I wonder what the range was. Was it mostly in the South? Or how far did Mexicans get it early on?
Arizona, New Mexico.
Yeah. Right.
California,
I've been probably?
The California, one of his eldest sister got married to this guy named Walter Weber, who had some success creating, like, he wanted to do Mexican-American ragtops, and they wanted to do it in English because my great-grandmother only spoke Apache and Spanish, and she didn't want to do it in English.
Yeah.
You know, she was old school.
Right.
She didn't like swing dancing.
So
my grandpa
wild,
was a crazy swing dancer. My grandma was too. They'd make money. They'd make ends meet with doing swing dancing.
Wow, real hustle, man.
They're real badass swing dancers.
So what are you going to do? You're going to write a movie?
I already wrote it.
You did?
Yeah. Guillermo's got it. Mike Judge has it. Roger Avery's got it.
Mike Judge, that's interesting. Why that choice?
Yeah, because he knew them and he's a dear friend.
Oh.
And I'm just trying to get...
He knew him? What do you mean?
Yeah. We'd go... I'm like, yo, let's stop at my grandma's and get some breakfast burritos. Like, all right, let's go, man. Let's go get some breakfast burritos.
Yeah.
And then we go down, like, holy shit, that's your grandma's breakfast burritos? Jesus Christ, that green chili. Oh, shit.
Green
damn.
Chili. Well, he grew up in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Well, he was there for a while anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you know him?
I auditioned for Idiocracy.
Yeah.
And we just connected then, even though he didn't hire me. I was like, damn, I could totally hang out with Mike. Mike's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah.
And then I ended up doing Extract, where get my ball blown off, my testicle. Just hanging by a thread.
So how far along are you in this movie thing? So you got the script out to people.
Uh-huh.
And you want to direct it? Or?
Yes, sir.
You're looking for a producer? You're looking for money?
Let's see what happens in the Guillermo camp.
Yeah.
Because he was such a strong influence, and he knew Grandma as well.
Yeah.
He was like the one opinion that he cared about at the screening of Pacific Rim. Like he just went out. But then the same way Bennett Miller and Philip Seymour, rest in peace, were concerned about what my grandma and grandpa thought when they saw Capote at Sony Studios.
Really?
Yeah.
Because did she know him or something?
They knew. Philip and Bennett knew who my grandpa was. But, you know, having worked with like Howard Hawks and Mervyn LeRoy and William Wellman and all the old greats. They just kind of went past the audience and beeline street. What did your grandpa say? What did your grandpa say? I'm like, okay. He loved it. He loved it. We're good. Like, dude, what's going on? You can ask him. I'll tell you.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty special.
So you've been practicing the directing, though? You've been doing videos and shit?
Well, I've done a bunch. Yeah. I've done everything from The Crowning Crows to Slash.
But no features yet?
No features yet. I love shooting. I love editing. Yeah. I'm just kind of a horror for it. I just love the process.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun. But I've recently, because I've got so much audio on Grandma, I actually had Grandma narrate some of the beginning. Because I didn't have the whole script ready yet, but we've talked about so much of it that I sat her down. I said, Wita. I said, Wita is what we would call her because as children, we couldn't say abuelita.
Yeah.
So we just say Wita or Wito.
Yeah.
So we'd be like, hey, Wita. And as adults, we still called her that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could actually be the person to narrate Wito's story?
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. So I've got hours of her. So what I've been doing, I've been harvesting her voice for AI. Through 11 Labs.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What's 11 Labs?
11 Labs is an AI for voice cloning or voice recreation.
Yeah.
So I've been isolating her voice and taking out my voice and any high pitches or knocks, and I upload it to this app, and I can get her, I can type what I want her to say.
Really?
Yes, sir.
How's it sound? Yeah. Correct?
Well, right now it's a little off, and I just found the I just found this little button where I can, because it says English, but then if you look on it, you can make it go to Mexican.
Yeah.
So for the Mexican accent, because grandma's got she looked very white.
Yeah.
But had a unique accent being from Texas.
Yeah.
In Texas, you never know. You get like a straight up, like full blown KKK member or Texan.
Yeah.
And you could be full blown, like dark Mexican. Yeah. You know, or you could be full blown white looking and have the thickest Mexican accent you've ever heard.
Yeah.
So you just never know what you're getting.
Right.
And that was the Jim Crow era, too. My grandma's youngest sister was the whitest. So if they were hard up for food, a lot of times they would roll the dice and have her go into the store to buy food.
Yeah.
And risk getting caught and possibly killed.
Really?
Yeah, my grandpa would stop. I'm like, well, let's not go into that one. That one's dangerous.
Oh, really?
Or that owner's known to, like, fuck with Mexicans or...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the...
So you want her to narrate, but it's going to be a... It's not a documentary.
It's an origin story.
Yeah.
And it pretty much ends when he gets signed by William Morris and goes to... and leaves WAI.
Okay. But that's interesting that you're using the AI.
Well, I'm not 100% on that, but I want to have it ready in case. I like being prepared.
People are just sort of like really just quickly adapting to it in a way that makes me nervous.
No, I understand. But also technology grows exponentially.
Yeah, I know.
And we're already at that phase where it's already, I mean, it went from 30% for passing the bar on Monday and by Friday to like 100.
Yeah.
So we're at that phase of the trajectory, just like
of technology.
Yeah, it's gonna, you blink and it's like already evolved. It's talking, you blink again and next thing you know it's living with you. You blink again, it's
And it's making, it's counting how many times you're blinking.
Yeah, it's moving super, super fast. I've studied this.
Is this good or bad to you, in your mind?
I think it's...
It's inevitable?
I think it's inevitable, yeah. I mean, we've already heard the things that have happened. I mean, look at the Boston Dynamics or the robots that they've been showing us.
Yeah,
I always say, look, this is what they're showing you. Just think about what they're not showing
you. And you were in Westworld.
I was in Westworld.
Yeah.
I was in Transcendence.
Yeah.
If you watch Transcendence Man, the documentary
about
all the technology coming together, because the internet's united.
The singularity?
World. Singularity, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I studied that a bunch.
Yeah, and what do you think of that?
Scary. We have no choice. It's just...
We have no choice because we let it happen.
Yeah, I mean, you could live off the grid, you know, in the forest somewhere. Mm. You could do that. But then everybody's connected in a way that you're not. I don't know. It's really what matters to you. And
we mean everyone's connected in a matrixy kind of way?
Well, in a sense, like anybody can text me or
sure,
you.
Sure, no, I
they
get
can
that.
Text us
no,
both
I get that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Call
and,
us.
But also, you know, we're part of algorithms and, you know, our desires are being mined and fed back to us through our choices we're making that are being sort of recorded and observed by pieces of equipment that we've grown to rely on?
There's shit that I don't say. There's shit that I think.
You don't say around your phone?
I don't say around my phone. or there's I've had some ideas that I've never even uttered.
Yeah.
Just because I...
Well, you know, they got this stuff that they're picking up brainwaves now, dude.
That's right.
When I heard that about the brainwaves, I'm like, well, that goes to show you that, you know, that we as humans are lazy in our appreciation and understanding of the way we communicate without talking. Like, if the computer can pick up brainwaves and make images out of our brainwaves, you can tell us that other people can't do that as well? I mean, right?
Sure, sure. Huh. But also there's other senses like, you know, body language.
Sure.
That doesn't need to be verbalized.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell, or when your girlfriend comes up, you know, when she's mad at you, you
right.
know she's happy.
Right.
Or you know when she's had
a bad
day. I
guess you do feel that, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, that aside, well, I hope that you make the movie. And what is this? Did your writer, too, you wrote a book with your...
I did, Prison Ramen.
Yeah, what is that?
I donate 20% of the proceeds to Homeboy Industries.
Sure, man.
Father Greg.
Yeah, Father Greg. You know Father Greg?
I love Father Greg. Father Greg and all the homeboys and all the homegirls over there. It's such a beautiful, it's a magical place.
Yeah.
Because I did grow up around a lot of gang activity as a young kid.
In Culver City?
Culver City, Inglewood, Watts, South Central.
Yeah.
Been shot at 3 times.
You have?
I got out of 3 carjackings. Yeah. I think I got 2 lives left.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Well, that's pretty good.
I'm cool
at
with that.
At 52, you're 52?
Yeah.
2 lives should get you through.
I'm with you. I'm so with you. I'm happy.
Yeah.
So I remember the first time walking in there,
to Homeboy?
Yeah, into Homeboy Industries. I saw a Latino. I saw North Siders, South Siders, white gangsters. you know, black gangsters. And I was like, oh shit, it's about to go down. I went straight to my fight or flight.
Yeah.
I put my back against the wall. I knew where the exits were.
Yeah.
And then I realized, like, oh my God, everybody's here to be of service.
Yeah.
And my eyes just watered up and I was trying to hold the tears back because yeah. I don't want them to see me breaking.
Yeah.
Because I realized yeah, how much yeah, love yeah. was in the room. Yeah. I was overwhelmed by the uh-huh. love. It was beautiful. And I sat down with Father G. He gave me a recipe. So yeah, a childhood buddy of mine, it did some time, and I went to go visit him after the Chino riots. I was like one of the first people there.
In prison?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I went to go visit him, and 7 out of the 8 cubicles when you're getting ready to transfer, he was a clerk at that time because he had done a lot of time and he had that stature. But he was the last module to not get burned. So even when I was sitting with him on the yard, you could still smell the burning embers, the wood. Like when a forest burns, you smell it. I could still smell it.
When was that? Was that uprising? A riot?
Yeah, it was a riot.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a riot.
Chino, yeah.
And it was a warden that wasn't paying attention to the house rules, as we say.
Yeah.
And they paid the price for it. So, and then he got removed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I've got photos of like Schwarzenegger walking through the prison and blood on mattresses and broken porcelain sinks.
Those prison riots are nasty, dude.
Oh, they're totally nasty. And it could have been prevented, but just arrogance, literally.
So your buddy survived.
He did. And we took from his diary, I selected a handful of stories which were very engaging.
Yeah.
And then we just polished them. We polished them while I was doing this pilot in North Carolina. I'd left my computer at home. Like, I had that visual when I was on the plane going, oh, shit, it's charging on my table. How am I going to do the rewrites?
Right, yeah.
On my damn phone. My thumbs were so fucking sore, Mark.
Yeah, but it's weird that you can make the adjustment, right?
Well, you're driven.
Well, yeah, I know, but like, I there's always something. Yeah, and you did it?
I did. Even Goose was like, yo, buddy, you look pretty tired, man. Why don't we just do this polish tomorrow? I'm like, no, dude, we got to motor through. Tomorrow's an easy scene. They got makeup for me. Don't worry about it. We got to finish this.
Yeah.
You know?
And you did it?
Yeah, we did.
And what is the book? It's just edited versions of his writing?
It is edited. Yeah. They're all original ramen recipes from prison. They're all very real recipes. And then with every recipe, we affiliate a story.
Yeah.
You know, in hopes that the youth will pick up on it.
What's the recipes?
Just all ramen. And ramen's taken over as a force.
It's for prison. Like, that's what they can do in their cell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's different in different prisons because some prisons allow farming, others do not.
Yeah.
Some prisons allowed extra stuff from the outside, others do not.
Yeah.
So it really depends. And it changes throughout. And it's a quick, fun read. And I had so many friends come to help. I mean, Sam Jackson did the intro.
Oh, wow.
And Father G and Shia LaBeouf and Taryn Manning. And
have you worked with that Shia fella?
Clancy Brown. Yes, sir. I did two things with Shia. I did Honey Boy, which is a very special film.
I saw that movie. Wait, well, hold on. Who were you in that?
I played his counselor.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
That was like the one positive role model he had in his entire life.
Right. Jeez, man. You're everywhere.
Yeah, it was special.
Yeah, that guy's intense, man.
He is intense. I think all great artists, we have our demons, and they get off our leashes a lot of times.
I think he is a very good, gifted guy.
He's insanely gifted, and he's very... it's just hard when you can't control your emotions. And you feel, it's like
one of the things. If you can't control one of the things,
you know what I mean? You go through
these
traumas.
It's a problem. If you can't control two or three, you're in trouble.
You're right, brother. You're right. Well, then you got to be good at getting out of trouble.
Sure. You got
to. And getting out of trouble.
You have to go to the place to
Lord knows.
Make up for it.
Yeah. He's gotten out of trouble quite a few times successfully. And I'm thankful.
Yeah.
But just like Dennis Hopper, you know, I said, Dennis, you've been blacklisted 3 times.
Yeah.
I said, how do you come back? You're an easy rider, and then you came back Blue Velvet, and you came back. He's like, you know what? You know, Gonzalez, honestly, they said I was difficult to work with. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. I said, were you? Yeah, I was. I said, oh, well, why? He goes, because Jimmy, James Dean.
Yeah.
Jimmy and Monty, Montgomery Clift. Yeah. Love to do their own blocking. Yeah. And I'm not Jimmy or Monty.
Yeah.
I was like, duly noted. Okay. Because Dennis and my grandpa were contract players under Duke.
Yeah.
Dennis, my grandfather, James Dean, Nick Adams.
Yeah.
Alfalfa from Little Rascals.
Uh-huh.
They were all under Bat Jack.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So when did you meet Dennis Hopper?
I met Dennis in 1991 on a Paul Schrader film.
Which one?
It was called, oh, was it called Witch Hunt?
Uh-huh.
I think it was called Witch Hunt.
Huh.
It was, oh, that famous author that I love. Not H.P. Lovecraft. Was it H.P. Lovecraft?
I don't know.
I think it was.
Witch Hunt. Yeah. I don't know about this movie.
Yeah, and Paul Schrader.
Wow, it's a Paul Schrader movie I never heard of.
Yeah, which
it's you and Bogosian, Debbie Mazur.
Oh my, yeah,
Penelope Ann Miller.
It was great to obviously work with a legend like Paul Schrader at that young of an age, because I was very well aware of who he was.
Yeah,
I knew all kinds of history about him, which surprised him. But the fact that Debbie Mazur was in it was my like, Debbie Mazur's in it, I'm doing it.
Yeah, she was something.
Oh, I had the hugest crush on her, and then I ended up dating her years later.
You did?
I did. Huh. I still got a Polaroid that I took from, or actually that makeup gave me.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, Debbie Mazur. I said, can I have this? Like, yeah, I still have it. I still have it. And then Dennis and I would stay friends like through the whole thing. Like, we were pretty tight actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, I loved hanging out with Dennis. It was, Uncle Dennis was cool. I went to his funeral in Taos. And,
yeah, my buddy's married to his daughter.
Oh, really?
Steve Brill. Do you know Steve Brill?
I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe by face.
I went out to the grave when I was in Taos last.
Oh, the Penitente.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something, man.
Penitente.
That's a real old-timey graveyard
well,
there.
A lot of people don't know the Penitente exists out there. I was doing Transcendent at the time, and Rebecca Hall's brother had flown in from England in attempts to do a Penitente documentary.
Well, I grew up in New Mexico. So the Penitente is up by Algodones. And
so you knew about this?
Well, I know about the Penitentes. Gotcha. What are you talking about exactly? I mean, they've been around a long time.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't find anything. And
who couldn't find anything?
Rebecca Hall's brother.
So you're telling me that
it was like secretive.
Right. But Dennis, that's a Penitente cemetery?
Yes.
Okay.
And Robbie Romero, his godson, who's Apache, had to get, Dennis asked him to get special permission from the high priestess. He was like, huh?
Yeah.
High priestess, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Penitente. Like, huh? Penitente here? In Taos? He was like, yes.
Well, why wouldn't they be? It's all over New Mexico, right? Isn't that where most of it
is?
I mean, from my recollection, they were out by Espanola, Algodones, but it was like, you know, that it's this sort of yearly Catholic beating the shit out of yourself thing, right?
Mm. Well, they did have two strong. Well, you've been there, so you know there's this two buildings at the entrance.
Where at the cemetery?
And one's a stronghold that has like the people and the guns and this and that, and it looks like it's empty, but it's not. They're constantly watching.
Yeah,
so be really careful what you do.
Right.
Yeah, because we went a year later for Robbie to do the four prayers to the north, south, east, and west.
Uh-huh.
So he did a full blown Apache.
So what are the Penitentes in your understanding?
I started to do a little bit of research. It comes from Spain. You get the flogging and all of that stuff. So from what I understand, it still happens, but who knows?
Yeah.
I don't really know.
Yeah.
And neither did Robbie at the time. He grew up there.
Yeah.
Huh. You know, so it was very secret.
And what was Hopper's relationship with them to get buried there?
I don't really know. Neither did Robbie. Robbie was shocked when he heard it. Like, he was like, what do you mean? Like, this is like the first time we're having this conversation.
Uh-huh.
Like, he grew up with
Dennis.
Because
it's a fairly nondescript grave other than what people leave there.
It's a beautiful crucifix.
All of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then people just go as a pilgrimage and seem to leave stuff there. I don't know when the last time you were there was. I was there like a year ago.
Oh, wow.
And it's just covered with stuff.
Like little motorcycles.
So,
little
all that kind of shit.
Easy Rider stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, I've been there twice. The first time I went, we were followed by a line of choppers. Because they circled the church during the whole ceremony.
Mean when you were there at the funeral?
Yeah, Henry was speaking, and Jack Nicholson was next to me, and he was...
Oh, Nicholson came out?
Yeah, it was beautiful to have him. He came out for the star ceremony as well, and was very friendly, was waving at all the tourists, like you never see Jack.
Mm.
Just so open-hearted, the way you've never seen him.
You work with him?
I have not. I would love to, but... I think
he's done.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
But so we were just circled by these motorcycles, and they came to the funeral, and they let them in to the Penitente Cemetery.
Yeah.
And I just remember Jack turning around, and he goes, as they started to lower Dennis in a literal pine box,
sure,
like you see in the Old West movies.
Well, it's like the Jews do that. Yeah.
Really?
Pine boxes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, full blown. So they're starting to lower it.
Yeah.
And then Jack turns around and goes, give them hell, boys. And so they did a 21 rev salute.
Yeah,
like,
oh, really?
Rome!
Yeah.
Rome! It was heavy. And Val Kilmer was there.
Yeah, well, he's living in Santa Fe at the time.
Yeah, it was. It was great to run into him there. It's like, I'm hanging out.
Did Gene Hackman come up or anybody?
I didn't see Gene.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a There's so many of his friends were there.
Did Fonda?
Seymour Cassell was there. No, Fonda did not come to the star ceremony, nor the funeral, and I'd worked with him a few times afterwards. And,
yeah.
I felt really bad because I was so close to Dennis, and I was such a fan of Easy Riders.
Yeah.
But then when I started to, he started to tell me about Henry and the book that he wrote.
Henry.
Fonda.
Yeah.
And he started telling me about the book.
It's Peter. Peter told you?
Yeah, he said, it's called Don't Tell Daddy, I think it's called. And when I learned about the trauma that he'd gone through, I just gave him a straight pass. I'm like, I can't hold anything against him. I don't know what their history is.
Oh, about Peter?
But between Peter and Dennis. I mean, I know what Dennis has told me and shared, and I know what I've read, and I know what I've heard from other people, but...
But after you heard Peter's story...
About what he went through his dad.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, okay, I gotta, like...
Yeah, you know. Guys, he had problems, dude.
Yeah, Henry was not cool.
Not cool?
No, it was bad. I think that's where that whole Rebel thing came from, you know? Because
sure,
even before Easy Riders, he had the... Hell's Angels?
I think a Corman movie.
No,
Wild, movie,
Wild
right?
Angels.
Was it Corman movie? Was it Roger Corman maybe?
Yeah, was it called Wild Angels?
I don't know. It just sounds like
a biker. That's where Satanism was big. So the satanic, like, woo.
Yeah,
that was like, oh God, Satan.
The B movie biker.
Yeah.
The B biker movie.
I love those things.
Yeah. Well, it was great talking to you, buddy.
Oh my God, it was such a joy. I was so excited. This is the highlight of my week.
Oh, good, man.
No, I was so sad when I couldn't make it that first time. I'm like, oh my God, I watched all the specials. I watched all of Mark's stuff.
It was so funny because I'm like, what happened? It's like, he fell off his bike.
Literally, bicycle, not a motorcycle, a bike.
Yeah, literally fell off his bike. And now we know a block from his house.
Not even. It was in front of my driveway.
Oh, wow.
The gate was still open. It hadn't closed yet. It was a crack. I was like, okay, not going to the gym today.
Well, I hope the full recovery is on the horizon.
Yeah, we're good in a couple weeks here.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, brother.
There you go. You can watch Jockey currently on Stars, and you can rent or buy it on streaming video platforms like Apple and Amazon. And it is a very specific, very personal, and very, you know, it's kind of a heavy, beautiful movie. I recommend it highly. Okay, look, hang out for a minute, will you? Okay, folks, in case you missed it, we dropped an episode in the free feed yesterday called The Full Marin Year One. If you aren't already subscribed to The Full Marin, this is a collection of some of the bonus material we've been posting every week for the past year. So go take a listen and then sign up for The Full Marin by clicking the link in the episode description. And if you have a Full Marin subscription, you can hear the latest episode that went up on Tuesday. It's me and Kit talking about Godzilla.
I don't think that Americans are equipped to understand that Godzilla is, like, Godzilla means a lot, you know? Like,
right.
Every American Godzilla movie, he's just a silly dinosaur, or there's, like, an overwrought plot, like in the new Legendary Pictures movies. There was, like, a Godzilla in 2014.
Yeah.
And then, like, a Godzilla in 2019 that I saw at a drive-in movie theater.
And no good?
It was fun to see it at a drive-in movie theater, but no, it was crap. Like, there's this plot in the American movies that they're still making.
Yeah.
That Godzilla is an ancient alpha predator from an ancient race of alpha predators called Titans. And there were dinosaur Titans and there were ape Titans and they all lived at the center of the earth and were worshipped by you. It's stupid.
It's like, a lot of backstory.
Why do you need all that shit?
Sounds like Scientology.
I know.
Again, go to the link in the episode description to sign up or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. Here we go. I think Rory Gallagher is seeping in. That's all I can say. We'll be right back.
Hammer lifts. Monkey, La Fonda, cat angels everywhere.